Blog Talk Radio.
Now on the day I was born, the nurses all gathered round, and they gazed in wide wonder at the joy they had found. The head nurse spoke up, said, "Leave this one alone." She could tell right away that I was bad to the bone, bad to the bone, bad to the bone, bad, 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 bad to the bone. I broke a thousand hearts before I met you. I'll break a thousand more, baby, before I am through. I wanna be yours, pretty baby, yours and yours alone. I'm here to tell you, honey, that I'm bad to the bone, bad to the bone, bad to the bone. Woman beg, and I make a good woman steal. I make an old woman blush, and I make a young girl squeal. I wanna be yours, pretty baby, yours and yours alone. I'm here to tell you, honey, that I'm bad to the bone, bad, bad, bad to the bone.
Well, I hope that woke everyone up. Good evening, and welcome to this Saturday's edition of Exploring a Crisis. We have your host here, Captain Breeden, c'est moi, Captain B2, a.k.a. Bobby Breeden, and my trusty sidekick, my co-pilot, my co-host, my compadre, as it were, Gray Eyes Smith. Are you out there, Gray?
I am, Bobby. How are you?
I'm splendid. Thank you for asking. Well, that's a lie. It's not true. I'm not splendid. I've had a kind of sucky week because I lost a friend.
Oh, no. Good to hear that.
Yes, my cat. My cat has joined his brother and sister in the great sandbox in the sky, and it's been kind of a rough week. So I'm kind of looking forward to this evening to just kind of shake things off a little bit and maybe feel a little bit better, because the last several days, if I'm not sleeping, I'm crying. So it's been kind of a miserable week. So anyway, but enough about that. So not going to drag that into our show. We are going to, how have you been?
I'm good, thank you.
Good.
Working lots.
Good. Well, the upside is I'm in the – I thought I would wait because I had him since he was a kitten. And so he's been my baby. And so I thought I would wait. Thank you for the condolences. I thought I would wait, and it's just been too lonely in the house. And so I'm in the process now of arranging to adopt two adult cats. And they're a couple of handsome – Yeah. Well, I figure their situation is similar to mine. Their owner died. My cat died. I figure we have a lot in common. Then there's a couple of handsome boys. They're 4 years old. One's black and the other's gray. And they go by the name of Fred and Joe. And I'm in the process of – I'm going to meet them on Monday. And the shelter staff – thinks that I'm going to be a good parent, and so I'm excited about filling which is, if you look on my website, you'll see the last thing I wrote was a poem called A Cat-Sized Hole, and that was my homage to Bocce, because when he left a cat-sized hole in my life. And so I said, I've had a baby, I don't want another kitten. It wouldn't be the same anyway, because he was actually my very first cat ever. So that's like your first love. You can't go down that road twice. So, but I'm looking forward to these two handsome fellas, because I hear they're shy, and they're quiet, and they're sweet, and they're loving, and I get a chance to give them somebody else a good home, and I get a chance to use all the cat stuff I've got around the house already. So anyway, so yeah, life goes on. Unfortunately, pets are a family, and when you lose them, you have to go through the grieving process. So anyway, I see. Northern Phoenix is my dog, died recently, 14 years. Yes, I had Bocce for 18 and a half years. Bless his little heart. He was sweet and gentle and loving. And he picked me out our friends who rescued cats opened up the carrier, and all the cats came pouring out. This one came marching directly over to me, and so when I picked him up, he stuck his little ping pong ball sized head under my chin, and I said, I looked at Tony, I said, "We're taking this one." He picked me. And it was overnight. It was very sudden, so there was no suffering. But anyway, I appreciate everyone's condolences. I've got a couple of notes from folks, and because people who have pets understand how attached and how much love you can give to them, and how they can give to you. So anyway, so this evening, our artist, let me tee him up here, David Seidman, and forgive me if I'm mispronouncing it, he has featured so many skulls in his work that I thought opening the show with Bad to the Bone would be appropriate. So shake things up a little bit. Not quite Halloween music, but I think has the same flavor and spirit. So without more delay, let's dive into what we have here this evening. We have 12 entries. So if we run out of material, wait a minute, I lied. I just refreshed, and two more popped up. Isn't that nice? So if we run out of material, I'm sure you can dig into your archives and come up with something of an appropriate holiday flavor, since we are just 2 days away from Halloween. Three? Anyway, I start celebrating early. Yeah. Who cares? Yeah, so... anyhow, let's go ahead and kick this off. I thought this was an interesting artist to feature for the holiday season because his material is so bizarre. It really is bizarre, but beautifully bizarre, colorful, a lot of attention to detail, not as deeply disturbing as Geiger. I look at his stuff and I get creeped out just even thinking about it. But this fellow's got a lot of attention to detail in here. He's a fan of some of my favorite authors. He's a fan of Stephen King. He's a fan of Ray Bradbury, whom I consumed in massive quantities when I was a teenager. Everything Bradbury wrote, I read. And the immortal Ray Harryhausen, for those of you who don't have the great good fortune to know who Ray Harryhausen is, he is the godfather. He is the forerunner of special of stop motion effects, of things with you see the early King Kong, that was not Harryhausen. However, he's got films out there that Jason and the Argonauts, where the Jason the one scene where they battled the army of the skeletons, and his films were so creative that he was the progenitor for a lot of the stop motion, a lot of the miniature special effects. And if you're a film of, or you're a fan of Pixar, if you've watched the Monsters, Inc. films, in the first one, there is an homage to Ray. Wazowski takes his girlfriend to a restaurant for her birthday, and the restaurant's name is Harryhausen. It's worth looking up, and there's documentaries on him. But this was one of the inspirations of this man's artwork. The reason I go into such detail is because Harryhausen was so prolific, and he was just he was a forerunner to the industry. So very, very much like some of the others that came after him for stop motion. So anyway, let's dive into what our contributors have sent us this time, and as I'm desperately trying to scroll, although my mousing demo ideas. Here we go. All righty. Would you like to kick off, or would you like me to? It matters not.
Liquid Mind Forever is a female, so maybe you should.
All right. I'll sink my teeth into her. All righty, we have Broken Beauty. Woven strands of hell's magic reach yonder, ceramic cast skulls. Cloven stands wizardry for each fragments cast. Harpy cult spines, spiders above monsters below. Weavers of spiritual dough, spiders above monsters below. Witchcraft and art and artists bestow. Broken beauty, no token thrill. Tracks of evil mount, tongues, spit fiery flames, flesh on the grill, still midnight climbs, ire's rungs, tongues undone, wrung children mangle, black widow wangs, death triangle, tongues undone, wrung, children's mangle, ghosts, ghouls rule, brutal bites, silk tangle. Come, dark priests and maidens of light, spread your thighs wide apart as youth's stroke of genius ignites, wild dance of death to start, hark, ye demons, and unseen and seen, bewitching hours, cauldrons stained green, hark, ye demons, unseen and seen, copulation screams, deaths between. End poem.
Wow.
What
excellent
did you
read,
think of
Bobby.
That? Thank you.
You know, it's kind of dark, quite honestly. You know, it speaks of broken beauty, no token thrill, facts of evil's, mouth, tongue spit fiery flames, flesh on the grill, still midnight climbs these rungs, rogues, tongues undone, wrong children, wrung children mangle, black widow wangs, death's triangle, tongues undone, wrong, children mangle, ghosts rule, brutal bites, sick tangle. Come, dark priests and maidens of light, spread your thighs wide apart, as youth stroke of genius knights, with dance of death to start. Ye demons unseen and seen, bewitching hours, cauldron strain, stained green, hark ye demons, unseen and seen, copulation screams, deaths between. Yeah, it's really dark. It's powerful, though. You know, you can see everything that she's talking about with her right, and you can feel the impact that these situations have had on society. So I thought it was a loud piece with a strong message to it. So, yeah, beautifully done. You did a wonderful job of reading it. What are your thoughts,
Bobby?
Oh, thank
you. It was... It wasn't her usual cadence. It was a different cadence for her. I noticed immediately. She didn't do the. She likes the wordplay with a lot of assonance, and she did not do that in the abundance that she normally does. And then this is not a complaint. It's simply noting a different rhythm to this piece. But I liked her her refrains in each stanza. Spiders above, monsters below, weavers of spiritual dough. Spiders above, monsters below, witchcraft and art an artist bestow. And she plays with the internal rhyme very nicely. If you know, she's got reach, skulls, each, culls, below, dough, above, below, bestow. And it's delicate. She's got, and in the second stanza, she's got thrill, tongues, grill, rungs, mangle, triangle, rung, mangle, tangle. And she's done it again, nonetheless. Light, apart, ignite, start, seen, green, demons, seen, between. Very nicely done. Very delicate, intricate rhyming pattern. And subtle. It sneaks up on you. And it's the abstraction of the piece, I think, beautifully reflects the abstractions of the art, because she says all images inspired the above. In particular, she listed 5, 13, 14, 28, and 34, which I should investigate later. I always like to look and see what tends to motivate people, what inspires them. But she's taken a lot of the threads of the different pieces that are very abstract and has woven them into a very delicately dark story that it reflects the same surrealism as the artwork, yet it does not lose you in the storytelling as some surrealist writers will do. So Liquid Mind Forever has given us yet another one of her beautifully crafted pieces, and I appreciate her contribution, and thank you, Liquid Mind Forever, for this marvelous contribution. Okay, let's see. What do we got next?
Sorry, I'll get to it.
That's all right. We're not going anywhere for a couple of hours.
Yeah. All right. We have a SoundCloud by Titus.
I'll put this
up and then I'll play the SoundCloud.
Okay, outstanding. Yeah, I was delighted to see that he had contributed. Not often.
Yeah, he's
we
a
get,
good reader.
Yeah, he's it's not often we get his work, and when we do, I find it an exciting piece to read and to listen to. So let's have him.
All right, here we go.
A whisper in your ear, dear brother, remains as is this fetal cognition, miscarriage of justice once my past tense, henceforth the day it will be to question. Your silence does allow me to think hard and long, as your labors will be forthwith. Include the past, to have you look back on, having taken the place of a brother, another, my mother calls it, makes three, given this mind and his body, her soul, a whisper in your ear, dear brother, with whom it was, with whom apprehension, if fear confounds, you'll find it will, I say. It is selective mutism you hide, inside to beautify your innocence, rather to bewitch in trance, don't you think? Whoever shall wear the disgruntled grin, a facade you will, for our mother's sake, wear the introspective mind's eye within. Silence tempers the confinement of space, between words that a pause has given you, a womb's displacement, her love as a dun.
Well,
brother,
excellent read, Titus. And you did a fabulous job of presenting in a manner which is comprehensible the message in your storyline. Silence tempers the confinement of space between words that a pause has given you. It wounds displacement, for love has undone. Wow. Amazing, right? It what a heck of a picture, too. From past to present, quad ear demonstration, pipe nagagia, a poem by Titus Wren. I liked it. You know, I liked his read. I liked his storyline. It was a wonderful, right? Excellent imagery. The metaphors are palpable, and the silence is definitely palpable as well. So wonderful, right? Thank you so much for sharing, Titus. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
It follows Titus's usual complexity. He has got a very intricate thought process when he composes, and he's almost layered a story upon a story here, because he talks about hypnagogia, which actually is it is the transitional state of consciousness between wakefulness and sleep, which is the opposite of hypnopomia, which is the transitional state that occurs before you wake up. With hypnagogia, you sometimes tend to hallucinate or imagine things or say things that don't make any sense. It's interesting that he has referenced that, which is another of his works, but with the illustration that he selected, he goes, a whisper in your ear, dear brother. and he's the from past to present. He's got the skeleton whispering in the man's ear, and the raptor on his hand. It's like they're almost whispering. I get the sense that they're whispering two different things. But the look of that's not confusion. That's bewilderment on the character's face, having taken the place of a brother. Another, my mother calls it, makes three, given this mind and this body, her soul, a whisper in your ear, dear brother, with whom it was and with whom apprehension, if fear confounds, you will find it will, I say. Interesting. That it's like he's receiving messages from a departed brother, but is the message coming from the skeleton or the bird? And he does not make it obvious. And then he's got what she didn't read at the beginning, a message from the lining of the uterus, identifiably hormone, to the baby which took its place. Interest. I mean, this is a really complex, deeply philosophical, very intricately surreal piece, which is, again, it has matched the intricate complexities of the artwork that he's chosen, and is definitely Titus. I really enjoy his writing because he challenges us to read it several times. And he's exploring a familial bond here and unspoken emotions. He leaves the reader to contemplate, which I give a lot of credit to a writer that will do that. So well done. Did you offer your opinions on this. What did you think of it, Gray? Oh, Gray. Are you muted?
Yes, I am. Thank you. But, you know, I liked his read. You know, his read really carried the essence of his write quite beautifully.
Oh, yes.
You know, he got away with that voice of his to bring the reader into his write and carry him along through the journey of the story, which is a wonderful, talented thing to be able to do. Hypocogia, it's a transitional state of consciousness between wakefulness and sleep.
Yeah,
it's the opposite of hypomapia. Or
hypnopompia.
Yeah.
Sounds like some sort of four-legged creature.
yeah,
interesting.
I can
understand what he's talking about with the hypnagogia, because I've experienced that several. I experience that often. Yeah, I find myself drifting off and saying things that make absolutely no sense, or I find myself waking up in the middle of a conversation with someone who is not there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And I realize I'm talking, and to no one in particular, I just keep right on talking. it's interesting.
Yeah.
But what the mind will do, and I like the way that he invoked these. Okay, so we've got the demonic reptilian dream eater. Oh, by Jenny the Deep. Oh, my goodness. Where is this going to go? would you like to venture it?
Okay, sure. All right, so we have Demonic Reptilian Dream Eater Creeps by Jenny the Deep. Spider climbing reptilian keen smelling demon prowling in the humanoid towns and dream stealing. As sentient creatures are sleeping, These magical demonic monsters are creeping. Exuberant and profoundly wise, yet vastly relying on sense for sight, on surfaces and ceilings they climb, consuming dreams, attacking with claws tonight. Inorganically surviving, living off dreams, not needing to breathe, this dream eater takes metal energies aberrantly. Slumbering victims will never wake up once lulled to sleep. End poem. And that's 71 words based on prompt 1, 2, 6, 9, 11, 22, and 23.
Well, she harvested a lot of them. I was hoping that because there seems to be a reoccurring motif in his word, or in his work, that our writers would find some commonality in his work and gravitate toward that. So, which seems to have been successful. So, righty, what did you think of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of got a horror movie type feel to it. You know, it's you can picture these things as they crawl on the ceilings and the walls, you know, looking for their next feast, which is you and your dreams, which is dark and it's beautiful at the same time. You can picture these things ready to take you off, and you'll never wake up. Because you can't, because your dreams are stolen. And I like the concept of that. It's very spooky. But yeah, I like it a lot.
It is very dark.
It is, yeah.
And it does that last stanza is a real stunner. Inorganically surviving off, living off dreams. Not needing to breathe, this dream eater takes metal energies aberrantly. Slumbering victims never wake up once lulled to sleep. It just it's a frightening concept to think that that once you fall into sleep, you are helpless and powerless to fend off this entity. That uses your mental energy to revitalize, renew itself. It's a concept that's been played with before, and I'm glad that she brought it in and introduced it into her work, because it's singularly frightening when you think about it. You slumbering victims never wake up once lulled to sleep. And it's like how many different films where people, they're dreaming and they think they're awake, and yet they find out it's like the alternative realities of the Matrix. You know, are they in a real world, or is it something that they're dreaming or imagining? It's a brevity, which I find impressive, that she's told such an intense a story in 71 words. Let's see. On surfaces and ceilings they climb, consuming dreams, attacking with claws tonight. Very nicely done. Very very frightening, and yet very good storytelling. So very, very creepy. Well done, Jenny. Thank you for that. So let's move right along. Who we got next?
One second here while I push it to the board. We have Uberos by The Laughing Lily.
Laughing Lily, yes. This is a new writer for us. I don't think she's contributed anything before. Ouroboros looked familiar to me, so I looked it up, and it actually is a circular symbol depicting a snake, or less commonly a dragon, swallowing its tail as an emblem of wholeness or infinity. And so when I saw that, it immediately looked familiar to me. I've seen it in some other stories before. So let's see how she threaded this into her story. The Laughing Lily, Ouroboros. There is a particular pleasure in the act of self-consumption, said the Ouroboros. There is pleasantness in the way the world blurs around a weary mind, delving through reddened skin, reaching beneath aching flesh. Relief is wet and white. The candle burns at two ends, sputters in the excess, drowning, but shivering with joy. Ouroboros, Ouroboros, come in many forms. End poem.
Wow.
She's also
I like it.
Got, it's another brevity. It's subtle. It's very subtle. She talks about self-consumption. And I like the reference of the candle burning at both ends, which is the classic reference to self-consumption. I burn the candle at both ends. It shall not last the night. But ah, my foes and oh, my friends, it sheds a lovely light, which means that you know you're burning yourself out, but it doesn't matter. And drowning but shivering with joy. This is an intriguing piece, a very cerebral piece. What did you think of it?
Yeah, you know, I liked it. I liked the concept of the Ouroboros who's finding pleasure in eating itself. the world burns, blurs around a weary mind, a pleasantness. And then delving through reddened skin, reaching beneath aching flesh, relief is wet and white. Engaging throughout, you know, it really has a backbone to it. And you can feel that in this write, and I liked her stance on it. So a great write.
And it's, if you look at the references through mythology, I cannot remember there's a type of snake in North America, they say, grabs its tail and rolls downhill like a hoop, which has sort of, that's nonsense. But, you know, it's how often things get started. It is emblematic through mythology, and the fact that she has seen this in this this artist's work. I'm trying to look and see. This one is, there's so people have gone to so many different prompts and seen so much in this, and I'm very glad I saved him for the Halloween show. So it, I figure the complexity of the write would be there for everyone. So, all righty, wow. Moving right along now, we have who else? Who we have next? Oh, by the way, before we go any further, when we get to Amy, A.M. Arundel, I call Dibbers.
Okay.
I like reading her work.
All right. So next we have Burn Me After Reading by Ben Hart.
Oh, my goodness. Go for it.
Okay. All right. So Eske and Hart, Burn Me After Reading by Ben Hart. I'll be late. This I know, even before going. But the more you left, the more you fed my love, the hungrier it became. One, Phantoms, Anonymous. There wasn't much left of her on the sunny side of the street, but the nebulous, easy, and shadows of tragedy that still chase ripples of impermeance. Trauma, trauma's defeat at Primrose Ridge. The quiet found him easily enough. He never hid from the stillness from which others ran headlong into anonymity. Granite shade was etched into every day pavement, no matter where the sun chose to shine. And on the days that he could fly, he tried to lift her, trying to perfect an emptiness with tears that were never shed, sweat cemented as monuments to second skins, phantoms they shared sheets with, whose lost touch still tattoos all their tomorrows. Lost boys and girls who took just what they needed and left the rest to weed and kill what they didn't need. I gave them life. I gave them life. I crawled across the dog-eared pages, tired journal, and I am always the first to leave. Burn me after reading. 2. Final survival. I hope this never reaches you. There are a million waves between us, and I pray upon every frail survival that will be the one to sink this message in a bottle to kill our love before I drag it down with me into oblivion. I hope to cause you questioning as a lifesaver that it's your thoughts I am drowning in and not the bed I made. 3. Muse, a trilogy. My muse talks too much in that manic rush from drunk to dreamer. 3 is nonsense. It doesn't even rhyme. And you use words that are too big. And I couldn't kill me if you tried. I don't like the way I'm left thirsty, drinking from an empty cups. Gold and silver can't buy me out of memories that linger. And rainbow laces never really were my thing. It's like a bouquet of flowers, perhaps pretty for a while, but then it takes a bow I hadn't earned. And I don't like the way that you pretend you don't exist, that you are the embers of something that never burned. It weighs the same on one's lips as a lie did in the moment it died white. And I hate the fact that you suppose to love like no one loves anymore until ruin. And with me, that was always promised to be a short romance, summer love, song of thrush, a moment's numb. 2. Hey boy, yes you, with the sad eyes and the red tattoo. Aren't you a little bit young to be so blue, to make something so sad of love without ever really having had it? I know they say youth is a madness, but the more of time you watch pass into dust, the more you will begin to welcome this expression of sadness instead of discovering love's trembling. Did you know that you were sleeping and the starlings murmured your dreams to me across molten skies? Why would someone like you, only 23 summers warm, ever look with weary eyes, dream of dusk, and long it be stolen by that voyager, death? I don't get it. You think it's all so beautiful, but somehow that leaves you lonelier, and you tell me these things in the first look you shoot me. Why? Why am I supposed to be your slanted immortality because you want to die alone? Well, and to you, that may be redemption in the absence of reprieve, but to me, it's worry which I have learned, is just freezing for grief. And if your hello was meant to break my heart, I hope your wish comes true, and intimately you will die from my goodbye. 3. Do you remember the day death looked, the way death looked, when Ghosts of Hollywood got married in the moonlight? How happy Mama was when playing the wolf in the garden with us before she get lost in the neck of a bottle halfway to the smile. Oh, how free your brother looked when dancing around the fire after getting lost in Westbrook woods and finding you there already waiting. Will you take these things with you when even the dust is but a memory? Or will you leave them here and fleet into dimming thinking it is peace? Or would you trade questions for free firebrands and sear your truth into the virgin flesh of each and every rebirth, marking all of your possible futures with the pain of knowing? End poem. And he says in his author's notes that was written with Eski. So that's her artwork as well.
Oh, nice. Lovely.
And
I'm glad to see that.
It says in his author's notes, it's an honor to walk next to you. We will make it
pretty.
Yeah.
Eh?
When this world finally burns out, love you, brother.
Wow. Well, have you any... What are your thoughts about this as you were reading it?
I like it. You know, it has a dreamlike quality that...
Yes.
You know, you wake up suddenly from and when it says it's, you know, hey, boy, yes, you, with the sad eyes and red tattoos, are you a little bit too young to be so blue, to make something so sad of love without ever really having had it? I know they say youth is madness, but the more of time you watch pass into dust, the more you'll begin to welcome this evaporation of sadness instead of discovering love's trembling. It's definitely impactful. You know, it really carries you into the writer's view and what he's saying to you about life and feeling love, you know, for real.
Yes.
Because you got to live to know what love is. And, you know, I think that's what he's saying. Go find your life and then find love. I mean, that's just what I take out of it. But, yeah, it's a beautiful write. Congratulations on your collaboration.
Yeah, really. I'm glad to see that. I like the way it starts. I'll be late. This I know even before going, that the more you fed my love, the hungrier it became. That those four lines right there could stand alone as a brevity. I mean, and then he goes on to delve into the complexities of the emotions that he is feeling. He's feeling love. He's feeling confusion. He's feeling sorrow, remorse, doubt. There's a whole panoply of emotions parading through this piece. The shadows of tragedy still chase ripples of impermanence. I like, and there's some subtleties in here that if your eye isn't keen, will dance right over them, which is just one of those rites that that merits going back. I mean, granite shade was etched into everyday pavements no matter where the sun chose to shine. And on the days that he could fly, he tried to lift her. So he's trying to share his head, trying to perfect an emptiness. He's trying to make something better that isn't there. Just elegant comment. And there's one down here that really took my eye. I'm scanning down, looking for it. Under two, aren't you too young to be so blue, to make something so sad of love without ever really having had it? This goes to your comment about living your life before experiencing love. You have to know that you're alive. I know they say youth is madness, but the more of time you watch pass of dust, the more you will begin to welcome this expanse of sadness instead of discovering love is trembling. It's very, very negative outlook on life. And here's I love this. This is so subtle. This is so elegant. And did you know that you were sleeping and the starlings murmured your dreams to me across molten skies? That is so subtle. Because, do you know, you've seen clouds of birds in the sky moving almost as one? You've seen that? There's starlings tend to do that. It's a flocking behavior. It is called a murmuration.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, a large group of birds, usually starlings, that fly together and change direction together, or the acts of the birds. They're dazzling displays. It's almost like you see fish in schools doing the same thing. But he talks about birds murmuring, and I thought that was the starlings murmured your dreams to me across the molten skies. How subtle he wove the murmuration, the act of murmuration in there, and likened it to a dream. Because it does have that quality. Why would someone like you, only 23 summers warm, ever look with weary eyes for the reprieve of dusk and long to be stolen by that voyager death? You've got some very subtle and deep questions in here. There's a lot of unanswered questions in this, and I think they're unanswered deliberately. They're tossed not only to the reader, but they're the ruminations of the author as well. So I think it's definitely a complex piece, not dark, but self-questioning, questioning life, questioning love, questioning the values of things, and it's done with such elegant language that. You sit and after you read it, you have those questions burning, laying there with you, that you can read over and play with. So well done, Ben. I think this has got to be one of the more intriguing pieces that he's written, and a collaboration at that. Very, very nice. Thank you so much, Eski and Ben, for contributing this. All righty, let us continue on. And Rob's poetry just joined us. Robbie's poetry, welcome, Robbie. Good to have you.
I've seen him around a long time.
Yeah. So I'm glad to see that. So please listen and contribute and write jot your thoughts out there, and then we will definitely read them. Okay, here we go. Aramundel, my girl Amy, and she roost with no bars. Some thoughts must be galvanized from your being, cleaved from your bedrock, hacked out until what you were will never be the same again. The ideas which take sacrifice, time, the harshest currency, and obliteration. They demand the cease of all else, the reckless destruction of any morsel it craves. And you must give it, and keep giving it, and keep feeding it, until at last the egg hatches, the fluid runs down into your eyes, you blink it away as if you watch it fly away. And then you take stock of yourself. The fluid has unblinded you, formed a pool beneath your rearranged bones, a mirror to see the gaping, clawed-out nest which it has made of you. And you realize that you spent so long feeding that one idea, that one little bird, now free and at the mercy of the same time which you fed it. And you realize that you have nothing left. You fed it all away. The rest of you is in tatters, crumbling facades and ghosts of relationships wandering your empty halls, open to the elements, open for any thought to come and go as they please and leave you bereft with no ceiling. A roost with no bars, an empty cage where the birds have long since flown free to more fertile homes, nestled now in younger, greener trees, and that your own deadened branches, browning leaves, broken twigs will never hear bird song again. End poem.
Wow. Beautiful read, Bobby.
And she,
and
thank you.
That's such
she's
a hard reading, right? But, sorry, go ahead.
She's written a prompt 15, which let's invoke that. So find the doggone contest. There it is. Oh, good. Not far away from it. Okay, prompt 15. Interesting. This is a man who looks like he has mountainsides on his shoulders, on his neck. He has mountainsides over that, that woven into his shirt. And the top half of his head is a nest with one lone bird departing. And the rest of his head looks like it's been like a broken egg. It's interesting. Wow. Wow. What she has done with that one image. What did you think of that piece?
Yeah, I like it. You know, it speaks about not living and, you know, the cost that it can have on your life and the choices that you make because you haven't lived, you know, can be all wrong and cost you everything. So there's a darkness to it, but also a message in there saying that, you know, you need to live your life and free that bird, you know. I liked it, you know. It's you realize that you have nothing left. You fed it all away. The rest of you is in tatters, crumbling facades, and ghosts of relationships, wandering your empty halls, open to the elements, open for any thought to come and go as they please, and then leave you bereft with no ceiling. A hole, a roost with no bars, an empty cage where the birds have long since flown free, and more to more fertile homes, nestled now in younger, greener times, and that your own deadened branches, drowning leaves, broken twigs will never hear birdsong again. Wow. I liked it. It was epic.
It's powerful. Very powerful. I see some interesting messages in here. I see her talking about how we as humans tend to fixate. In the military, we call it target fixation. You basically fixate all your energy, all your thought, your essence on one target, and that becomes your life's work, your objective, your goal, to the exclusion of all else, even to the exclusion of living. You dedicate everything you are to that goal, not giving any thought to is the right goal for you. And as I was reading this and listening to it, I had the visions of Van Gogh, how obsessed he was with his painting, with expressing himself a certain way, to the exclusion of all else, not questioning whether it was right or wrong, simply driven by the concept that this is how he had to express himself. This is what he saw. This is what he felt. This is how he had to show it. And I get that same sense of obsession in here. The fluid has blinded you, formed a pool, a mirror to see the gaping, clawed-out nest which it has made of you. And you realize that you spent so long feeding that one idea, that one little bird, now free and at the mercy of the same time which you fed it. And how you can become victim to the target fixation, to the obsession, be it of a person, of a goal in art, of whatever it is that drives you. And said you will now realize you have nothing left. You fed it all away. The rest of you is in tatters, crumbling facades and ghosts of relationships, wandering your empty halls. And that's why I see. That's what made me think of Van Gogh, is how he sacrificed his entire life for his art, and how he never sold anything the entire time he was alive, and yet he cleaved to that concept, and he dedicated, he sacrificed his life to it, and that's what made me think of that parallel. It's a very powerful piece. Very cerebral, very deeply philosophical. I really admire this piece that Amy has sent us. I think one of her best. So thank you, Amy, for this marvelous piece. Motivated by one piece of artwork. Let us move along, please. Okay, we have Trick or Deceit by Fran Marie. Okay, dive in. Give it a go, please.
Okay, so we have Trick or Deceit by Fran Marie. She blinked and missed the keen magician's sleight of macabre intentions. Standing at the edge of life, dealing out disenchantment, pulling white rabbits from empty hats with black illusions. Death knocked on the door, handing out blood and bones as a midnight Halloween treat, another mix of tricks up the Reaper's sleeve, came rushing down, falling fast off his high scaffold of whispers, chimes, wrapped in a music box dream, gagged and swaddled in bondage and bound for eternity. Inside, choking stronghold. She feels entrapment, his ever-tightening grip of possession, cannot set her free, and will not let her be. Slowly slipping into his torturous noose of condemnation and deceit. Wow, I liked it. What are your thoughts, Bobby?
I think she captured the essence of the illustration that she chose quite well. She talks about swaddled in bondage and bound for eternity inside his choking stronghold. You look at that and you can see that there, that her captivity or that figure's captivity, and how that possession will never be released or eased up. It's and you can see this as a an eternal, never-ending thing. Standing out on the edge of life, dealing out disenchantment, pulling white rabbits from empty hats of black illusions. Wow, great, great metaphor in here. It's I don't know if you could call it a brevity. It's certainly very short. But great storytelling. I think an ingenious interpretation of the prompt. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I like your metaphors in here.
Yes.
You know, it's a talented, right? It really speaks loudly of not getting lost in it, you know. Don't get entrapped by anyone or anything. You know, live your life free and make your choices. Don't let everybody else make your choices. So, but yeah, deep metaphors and a powerful right.
Great piece. Wow. Thank you so much, Fran Marie. And I think another a new writer for us. So welcome. Glad to see him. Okay, what have we got next?
Let me get to it here. Okay, so we have Living Prey of Cork Dreams by Pam Ray.
Oh.
And I'm going to copy this.
I don't think she has a SoundCloud, so I will channel Pam the best way I know how. As soon as you put it up
there. Yeah,
get
that Midwestern twang going.
There we go. All righty. And here we go. And a one and a two. The Living Prey of Corkboard Dreams by Pam Ray. With poised melancholy, she strokes the scapegoat to find the bleating of sacrifice to fork-tongued thoughts of martinis and outstanding credit. She sits beneath pearled lunacy layered in a midnight sky. Once upon a time, she had a name. Today, her mind is too numb to remember what letter it began with. There is no cosmic interference. Only the organ grinder's monkey spreading jam for the toast of the town. Messengers of meaningless death swarm the crown to the solitude of Icarus dreams burning bright and fast. Toward the horizon glows a pop culture, land of tinsel and corkboard dreams unfolding. Sows and lemmings toss into bonfires. A land of cacophony, catalepsy, where every pent-up doll has a decent price therapist and a sturdy couch to buck and bray their way to the top. The living prey of devils, in love with a culture of money and fame. The world is a grand party on the flip side of relevancy, poisoned honey lined with diamonds and fur. A madcap adventure of humdingers and hallucinations where the ruffling season of the dread carves price tags into carpetbaggers and everything silver-lined is sinking beneath the chore of gulping down the screams. She knows that out there is a land of chokeholds and vomit floating in bathtubs mixed with the last hurrah of neon and necromancer. It's all so bright and beautiful, light reflecting off broken shards, like hungry child gripping the teat she wants every last drop. She'd gladly bow before the Reaper to be dealt to the master of the horned fae, to be in denial of her own gag reflex, swoon, starry-eyed, in a language of New Age goons. She'd rather be the headline of a gossip rag, a still-life photograph of smudged makeup, carnality, and seances warping the clay stage of primordial performances. She'd rather have her 15 minutes of fame than die in the second-hand plaza of a poor man's boredom, where there's nothing but dead leaves in threads of indecency and infection in the cut of sunshine afterthought. Left to hang bare on the twine of rough wind. End poem.
Beautiful read, Bobby. And I liked it.
Thank
you know,
you.
Wow. It's got a message in it, you know. I think that Fran Marie caught this. A sad truth written about those who would seek material things of a bright, decadent world of fame, you know, as opposed to life. And I liked it a lot, you know. I mean, we all want that fame and fortune, but, you know, what's it really like to have that? You know, is it everything that it's cracked up to be? And would you give up your life for it? I mean, I think we all kind of think we would, but not really. I mean, I wouldn't want to be rich and famous if it stole my life away from me, which is what I get out of this, right? So,
yeah.
Amazing job, Pam. Deeply metaphoric.
Yeah, well, Pam is the mistress of the well-turned metaphor. And this piece, I think, like nothing else I've read from her pen, this crackles. This crackles with cynicism. It questions the values, the surface values of glitz and glamour. Is it hollow? Is there anything to it? Are people sacrificing their lives for illusions of fame and grandeur? It reminds me of the final scenes of Sunset Boulevard, where Gloria Graham descends the staircase after having murdered her lover, and she gazes into the camera, and she says, "I'm ready for my close-up, Mr. DeMille." And in that moment, you see that the illusion of her life has come crashing down around her, and she has left. She has left reality, never to return. And this has that same flavor to it. Everything is silver lined, is sinking beneath the chore of gulping down the screams. She knows that out there, there's a land of chokeholds and vomit floating in bathtubs mixed with the last hurrah of neon and necromancer. It's so bright and beautiful, light reflecting off broken shards. It's as sparklingly dark, if you can entertain that oxymoron. The picture she paints here of the hollow glories of that lifestyle of pursuit of fame. And does it really return to us what we truly seek? I mean, even the beginning, if you look at the beginning, with poised melancholy, she strokes the scapegoat to find the bleeding of the sacrifice to forked-tongued thoughts of martinis and outstanding credit. She sits beneath pearled lunacy layered in the midnight sky. Once upon a time, she had a name. Today, her mind is too numb to remember what letter it began with. That is so stunningly profound, and that's what made me think of Sunset Boulevard. The Sunset Boulevard, if you've not ever seen it, it is a classic. It is Billy Wilder at his absolute best as a director. It is the story of an aging film star who is desperately clinging to the glory of her past. Vainly, and in the end, trying to cling to that is her undoing. It's spectacular if you've never seen it. Be ready to be depressed. But that's what it did. This smacks of Sunset Boulevard in only the way that Pam Ray can do it. So, Pam, this is an outstanding piece of work. I wouldn't be surprised if this is right up there with the, you know, in the gold category. Am I tipping my hand? No, this is a stunning piece, absolutely stunning. And just from that one illustration, because interestingly enough, some of the other artwork he had portrayed portrayed that I did not include deliberately. One was Greta Garbo, one was Marilyn Monroe, and this one is actually, I believe, Clara Bow, who is who is a silent film star. So, but I left her in thinking that she would be so unfamiliar as for the current reading public to not be familiar with her and therefore not coloring their thoughts. But Pam, Lord Lover, picked up on it right away and ran like a champion right through to the end zone and spiked it for a touchdown on this one. So well done, Pam, and thank you. All right, what do we got next? Are you muting? Robbie Pendon hears this laugh out loud like a construction sign warning depression ahead. Yes, yeah. And I will, for those who might be interested, since I do have an annoying habit of making references to classic films, I will put up some information on Sunset Boulevard. And honestly, if you are a classic film buff, if you're familiar at all with Billy Wilder, who was one of the greats, he was the director of Some Like It Hot, Stalag 17, some absolutely and some very groundbreaking films, because Hollywood told him and said, "You can't do that," and he said, "Why not?" and went ahead and did it. So I will include a little bit of information on Sunset Boulevard should anyone want to pull it up on Apple TV and watch it. So are you back from the unmuted regions of silence, Gray? Earth to Gray, come in, Gray. Oh, please tell me I'm not alone. Gray. Oh, Gray. Oh, there we go. You posted. Yeah, we did.
Yeah, there we go. Okay.
Hey.
All right.
You, okay. Don't do that. Don't
yeah.
Scare me.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
So we have Death Changed My Life by Lakota Brody.
And yeah, a new writer. Here. Yeah, please.
Death changed my life, but how could it not? I was the broken doll, the dust on a chiming rock clock. I was that of Poe's whisper caught in a scream. Lucas, Oleander, and Belladonna mixed into a cup of tea. I was the nevermore, but forevermore. Time on and time off, or so it seemed. I was the nightmare you dreamt as a child. I was magic, choked out by darkness, but nothing was as it seemed. I was everywhere, but nowhere. The reason for the warning, beware, was too much. But not enough. Time in a glass, tears in a jar, art in the monument that had gone too far. Ripped sheet music on the podium, a broken mirror, a crippled star. Haunting, yet harrowing. Beauty was mine, ravishing, yet ridiculous. I stood the test of time. Tap dancing across cemeteries, waiting, vaulting through the graveyards, consuming souls and leaving less, holding cans with those that sleep between the earth and on the shelves. I smell the anguish and the taste, the loss, and as the wet, cold fog fondles me, I ponder. At what cost? Shrugging my shoulders, shaking my head, all the while thinking, why not death has changed my life. So, trick or treat until we meet. End poem.
Great ride. Great read. Lakota Brody, another new writer for us. And I think fairly new to AP. She's got 52 pieces out there on her page. So I'm glad to see that she has visited our contest. It's always lovely to see that, new writers and new members. What did you think of this piece?
I enjoyed it a lot. It really had a nice flow to it when I read it. But, you know, the imagery is impactful. The message is clear, but yet it's steeped in metaphor. You know, holding hands with those that sleep beneath the earth and on the shelves, I smell the anguish and taste the loss. And as the wet, cold fog fondles me, I wonder at what cost. You know, death has got you, and you're now paying the ultimate price. So you got to go with it. And shrugging his shoulders, shaking his head, all the while thinking, why not? Death has changed my life. So trick or treat until we meet. Great way to end it. And it was a fabulous
Yeah. Great
pleasure to read it.
A very subtle, intermittent, internal rhyme. And I like the way it starts off. It's a very provocative start. Death has changed my life, but how could it not? A wonderful question. I was the broken doll, the dust on a chiming clock, that of poets, Poe's whisper caught in a scream. I was oleander and belladonna mixed into a cup of tea. I was nevermore but forevermore, time on and time off, or so it seemed. Wonderful subtleties. And I know, I'm sure that you're familiar with belladonna as being a poison. But you know, did you know that oleander is also a poison? The very beautiful...
No, I didn't.
The very beautiful shrubberies that you see very often growing in the desert as the landscaping. Oleander is extremely poisonous, as is belladonna, which is a member of the nightshade family. I like that. Mixed into a cup of tea. I was never boat more, but forevermore. The play on words in this is very artful. I was the nightmare you dreamt as a child, magic choked up by darkness. I was everywhere but nowhere. The reason for the warning of beware, I was too much but not enough. It is dancing back and forth between extremes, very artfully, almost like a ballerina in toe shoes. Ripped sheet music on a podium, a broken mirror, a crippled star, haunting yet harrowing. There's a lot of very artful wordplay in this. It's very skillfully written. Holding hands, like you said, this one, holding hands with those that sleep beneath the earth. And on the shelves, I smell the anguish and taste the loss as the wet, cold fog fondles me. I ponder at what cost. And I think that is... Those the first few lines, holding hands with those that sleep beneath the earth and on the shelves. I like that allusion, especially on the shelves, referencing cremated remains that we have, because I'm reminded of that by the fact that I now have the remains of three different pets sitting on my shelf on my mantle in my living room. And holding hands with those that sleep. I think that is so beautifully turned phrase. I mean, how could not have been said better? This is a really skillful write, great storytelling. intriguing wordplay. I think I'm going to start following Lakota Brody. I like the way she constructs her stories, and a very erudite way of expressing herself. So I've just now started following her, and I think it's going to be interesting. So thank you, Lakota Brody, for contributing this to us, and really enjoyed this. Okay. Let's
all right, we have a caller. We have Robbie's Poetry, a.k.a. Rob Poetry, I believe.
Hello.
Hello, and welcome to the show.
Couldn't
Thank
stay
you.
Away, could you?
I took it as a sign to call in when you're solo there for a little while. And I was getting ready to call in so you wouldn't have to host solo but Gray Eyes came back on, and it's like, well, you know what? I think I'll take that as a cue to phone in regardless.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I'm glad you liked the poster I put of Sunset Boulevard up there.
Mm-hmm.
If you've never seen that, for those who are aficionados of classic Hollywood, I strongly recommend it, because if you like it, then you will have dipped your toe in Billy Wilder's work, and I guarantee you that you will be bitten and smitten.
And did you get a chance to hear that last piece by Lakota Brody?
Yeah, and I read it over quickly as well. And one thing it made me think of right away is life and death, but especially like death and how it relates, like in opposition to life and such.
Yes.
Because it's really cued into what I've been reading a lot of lately, because I've been, with Halloween coming up, I've been reading a lot on vampires. I'm rereading Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Oh.
And I'm reading, like, kind of from scholastic point of view about vampires. And I was thinking on this metaphysical level, I've been coming up on something more and more with immortality and death and life. And, like, immortality, it sounds like a great idea and all that, but you would eventually forget anyone you ever loved because your brain could only hold so much, right? And all kinds of other things that you wouldn't think about, consequences of that. And
right.
I just come across this message that like immortality in the form of a mortal body, like a vampire, would just, it's not what you want. Like immortality as a spirit, is what you would be questing for. And there's a deeper message to me behind that I'm not too sure how to say it, but it's like it's meant for the spiritual world, right? And this kind of makes me think of kind of the truest meanings of life and death, and what each of them are supposed to be, both by themselves and in relation to each other. And like with death, like, you know, death isn't exactly a desired thing and all that, but I mean, without it, there wouldn't be any renewal. And I came across a very interesting consequence of, like, if people never died, like, imagine all the different dictators and out there, everything in the world, if everyone was immortal, and they would still be spewing their hate out through the centuries, right? Because they just,
oh my,
because
yes,
they don't die, right? So I know it sounds like a lot drawn from one poem in that, but just because of how it talked about death and dealt with it, it really tapped into that whole thought process that I've been really diving into over the past month. And it's something I've really given a lot of thought to. I just started to realize, especially through the lens of a vampire, that immortality in the physical world sucks. It just sucks. So.
What a great concept. What a great idea. Yeah, a great idea. And you.
Hello, Bobby?
Yeah.
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 Here I am. Talking to the ether.
There you go.
Well, I had some. I had noise in the background, and I didn't want it to interfere. I tend to quote, and I was trying to remember where I got the quote, and I'm going to post it. There's a quote that I've used quite regularly, and I couldn't remember where it was from, and I should have known it was from Star Trek, the original one. There's an episode called Metamorphosis, where Zefram Cochran who is the inventor of warp drive. They find him marooned on a planet, supposedly by himself, but he's not. He's with this other entity when he landed on the planet, he was old and dying, and now he's a young man. The entity has restored him and has been his companion, as he calls it. But he's been out there on this planet with this entity for who knows how long. And the quote is, "Believe me, Captain," he's talking to Kirk, is, "Believe me, Captain, immortality consists largely of boredom."
Yes. Well, that's the one thing people don't realize. All that time you are, that you're living, like they say in astronomy especially, eternity is a long time. Eventually you would find that you've done everything that you want to do, and all that. And once you've done everything you want to do, what the hell is there left to do?
there are several storylines like that. This metamorphosis being one of them, which is interesting because he is a mortal man who lands. He's with this entity who restores him, and it turns out that the entity is female. She has formed a bond with him that he doesn't realize. But there's another episode called "Some Live Like Lazarus," and the character that they find on this planet by him, he's by himself except he has a one woman with him, and it turns out that this man is by some chance of chemistry or fate. Or genealogy, he is immortal, and he was on Earth, and he was Mozart, he was Da Vinci, he was Michelangelo, he was all of these different famous people, and he lived the portion of a life and then moved on. And it was interesting because in all that time, he could not find a companion who could spend time with him because all mortal companions died, and he creates, he creates himself a companion, but she does not know how to love, and when she discovers how to feel love, she dies. It's got interesting, but it talks about immortality, and the fact that people think that this is To live all that time, if you're not experiencing something new, at what point do you stop experiencing something new? It's like if you've ever watched the film Highlander with Christopher Lambert. It talks about him being immortal. It's an interesting concept, and like you said, Robbie, at what point do you stop living, stop experiencing, and simply exist? So it's an interesting question that you pose there. I find myself also, because of the holiday, I've gone back to, rather than vampires, I've gone back to Phantom of the Opera. And that original storyline, which I find interesting because, here's a man who is held captive by circumstance and does the best with it. I think it's Flaubert. I'm trying to remember the author of the book. All of a sudden I've gone blank. Gaston Leroux. Thank you. Guest on LaRoe, 1909. And for as many times as the book has been rendered into a movie or a musical or what have you, it is, I find it worth the read to go back to the original piece, because you find complexities in it that cannot be rendered with any great success. With the musical, she sings, keep your hand to the level of your eyes. But they never really explain why, but they do in the book. And it's interesting that you really get a glimpse of the soul of the man in the book that you don't with the Hollywood treatments. So it's interesting.
Yeah,
that
Hollywood treatments, you can't take the time, the proper time, to really flesh out the scene, flesh out the characters, and yeah.
Now you've gone back to Bram Stoker. Have you also explored what his wife took great exception to, which was the Nosferatu treatment of Bram Stoker's vampire Dracula character?
I have seen Nosferatu, like the original,
yeah,
like the with the clawed hands and
yeah.
and all that. And, yeah. Yeah, I've seen that.
That is well worth it. But it's interesting that they do not make reference to Dracula, but they do make a reference to the undead, and it's an interesting rendition, because not only is there a film called Nosferatu, but there is a film about the film called Shadow of the Vampire, and it's William Dafoe plays Nosferatu, and it turns out that the actor who is playing it actually is a vampire. So it's a fascinating, fascinating film. So,
well,
all right.
One person of this vampiric is Dafoe, right?
Well, yeah, oh, he looks like, he's always looked like one to me anyway. So, yeah, but it's, I'll post the information up on the board. So if you're interested, you can look into it. But that, yeah, the Nosferatu is a silent film, but the Shadow of the Vampire is about the filming of Nosferatu, and it's an interesting concept of how they did that. They made a film about the film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
cool.
I will. Wow. I'll look that up, and I'll get the. It's a 2000 film. Let's see, William Dafoe. Yeah, because he plays Max Schreck, who actually was the actor who plays Nosferatu.
Wow, Bobby, you're an encyclopedia of information.
I get that from my friends all the time, and like you guys, you're always saying, "How do you remember all this stuff?" I don't know. I just am. I read it and I remember it. It's just up there. It's very crowded up there right now.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I just absorb information and stuff like a sponge, and I just like
I do.
I say something to somebody, and it's like they say, "I didn't even know that existed." It's just like no clue.
I do, and it's just there's right now there's a fellow up there in a pink cashmere sweater dusting off the shelves and trying to rearrange things as I'm constantly storing new information. let's move right along now. And who we got next?
We have Trick or Treat by Ken Doll, if you wouldn't mind reading that, please, Robbie.
Okay, here we go. Malevolent ways, ready or not, truth or dare, if truth be told, I say. The hills have eyes, are watching. They know what I did last summer with Jennifer's body. The devil's rejects were watching the naked sinners in the last house on the left. There's a curve where there used to be a daycare or orphanage on a dead and evil road for the devil to house the dead that won't die. Can't you see these were once their woods in this place where misery's company came to settle and lie? Walking all over the grave, the sacred ground toiled. The poor grudge generations drowning in the dreams wet from the bed you made, stained and soiled. You were you when you and I first met, saw it, the child's play, the poltergeist, the hide and seek, us insidious dark pleasures, the hauntings, new nightmares, and the final destination, where they spit on your grave. Remember the ring, the last Halloween, another scream, the changeling, the evil dead ends and wrong turns. There was that thing, the shining and the conjuring. Back when I was waiting to love Jennifer's body, a switchblade romance when a stranger from a cabin in the calls from a street. Sorry, a stranger calls from a cabin in the woods. Goodbye, mommy, under the skin, the ghost dimension, the evil dead, the town that dreaded, all unfriended. Hush, don't breathe. Find a quiet place before sundown. Get in the hole in the ground. It's 47 meters down. You'll meet the residents evil running this town. It's lights out in the darkness when you feel the tremors. Sometimes they come back with the others. It follows in the shallows. You'll see the creep show and hear my psycho in the stir of echoes. Unless it's Fright Night and you're a good old boy and one cares what they do in the shadows, watching Ghostface, Green, all waiting in line to love Jennifer's body. End poem. I'm remembering
wow.
to do that now. End poem.
Well, you did a beautiful read of that, Robbie. Absolutely. And Bobby.
Yeah, it was a great read. That is pretty chilling. Great storytelling. You get wrapped up in, where is my computer going to be now? Okay, there we go. It danced away here. Ken Doll, bless you. Malevolent ways, ready or not, truth or dare, if truth be told, I say, the hills have eyes, are watching. And what sets the stage? He sets the stage for the rest of this story. Back when I was waiting to love Jennifer's body, a switchblade romance. He's really invoked a lot of the imagery from some of these Cabin in the Wood films. I absolutely refuse to watch. Would you believe it? The first time I saw Halloween, the original one with Jamie Lee Curtis, I was married. It was Halloween. My husband had duty, and our home was back right up against the woods. Why did I want
a little too close to home?
Scared the crap out of me. And here I am, curled up, you know, in fetal position, in the corner of the sofa, you know, like, oh my God, hush, don't breathe, find a quiet place before sundown, get in a hole in the ground. You meet the residents evil running this town, it lights out in the darkness. Great storytelling, great visual imagery. Very, very, very engaging storyline here, and I'm looking to see did he cite a all? Is it all prompts? Oh, I like this. All prompts and 50 plus horror movie titles.
I noticed that right away. Yeah, all like composed of horror titles. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, the child's play behind the played poltergeist at hide and seek. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is I saw that in the theater also. It's a great pastiche of all of the dead. There, I think they believe there's a film called Jennifer's Body. Ken had fun with us and told us a great story and scared the crap out of us, and we had fun in the process. So great piece. Ken, what did you think? What did you think, Gray?
I liked it. You know, his use of movie titles was exceptional. You know, it really takes a lot of knowledge and understanding to have written this in such a way that he uses all those titles as if they're meant to be in this poem. And this poem has an excellent feel to it. You know, it feels real, like it's not made of movie titles, you know. You really wouldn't know that if you didn't understand all those movie titles were in there. But yeah, I really liked it. Watching Ghostface scream, the scream, all waiting in line to love Jennifer's body. Yeah, epic, right? And a fantastic read, Robbie.
Thank you.
And Robbie, what did you think of the piece?
Well, I had a certain sort of same sort of thought as you, where you're talking about the watching the movie and getting the crap scared out of you, and you're watching like the most inopportune movie for your moment. And for me, it was the thing, because I have I'll tell you in more detail in a private message about my experience of the first time I watched the thing, but I decided to rewatch it a couple of years ago. So this is during COVID. So you know, here we are. Here I am watching a movie about guys isolated with a disease, mysterious,
yeah,
horrible disease, running through an Arctic station, and I live somewhere where it's really cold too. And I'm like, why am I doing this to myself? I think I was trying to exercise some demons, right? And I'll never forget my reaction when the alien, when the thing,
yeah,
flies out of the petri dish, and then they
God,
set him on fire, and then it crawls away as a spider with a head. I pointed to it, and I said, that's the Delta variant. The guy just says, oh, fuck me. And because he can't believe it can't die, right? And I just point to it. I didn't know and I just say, oh, that's the Delta variant. So that kind of same experience. I like how used all those titles, and that it can be a craft to it, and it can be hard to do, because when you're trying to put in that all in, it can sound forced. Honestly thought that he did a better job in the first half of it than in the second half. The second half, I found I got a little tongue-tied. I felt like the flow was better in the first half than the second half.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, but it was interesting to kind of make a scan through all those titles, and had a little bit of extra interest for me in that I'm starting to watch horror now, but I have hard lines about what I will and won't watch. Like, I won't watch body horror, and a certain level of, certain kinds, like certain level of whatever, but I'm starting to appreciate the genre a little more, and this is one of those poems where I'm curious to see. I might actually do that. I might actually read it to myself again next Halloween and see if I've read, or sorry, if I've watched any of those movies, because it's hard to say what I'm going to end up having watched or not by the end of next year. So
yeah
it's an interesting experience from that perspective for me. So,
yeah. Well, if I can make a recommendation, which I'm plucking the information as we speak, are you familiar with the author Shirley?
What was that?
Are you familiar with the author Shirley Jackson?
Shirley Jackson, no.
Okay. Many of us in high school were forced to read a short story called The Lottery.
Mm-hmm.
And that was by Shirley Jackson. And she wrote a book called The Haunting of Hill House. And it was made into a film in 1963, a rather limited cast. It's a black and white, directed by Robert Wise, a very good director. The cast is four people, basically, four primaries, Julie Harris, Claire Bloom, Richard Johnson, and Russ Tamblyn. Yes, Russ Tamblyn from West Side Story, Riff. And other than a couple of incidental characters in the beginning of the film, they're basically your four protagonists. And this is about Richard Johnson is an anthropologist who's doing paranormal studies. And he rents this haunted house and has these people come to the house as part of the study. The reason I cite this film as an absolute must to watch is it is rated as like one of the 10 or 12 best horror films of all times. Martin Scorsese puts it on his list of the 11 scariest films of all time. Martin Scorsese. And it is made with almost absolutely no special effects. What terrifies you is what you don't see. It is
okay. I put that in my Google and I'm bookmarking it.
It's black and white. It's a mind game. As a matter of fact, I'll probably watch it myself tonight. I'll probably watch it a couple of times before Halloween. It is one of my absolute favorites. The only special effect you'll see is there's at one point there's a door that a wooden door that looks like it's breathing. It's moving in and out. But there's voices. It is like the beginning of Jaws. You are terrified by what you cannot see. And it's the same like the Curse of the Cat People, which was made on a very thin budget. And so rather than show people in cat suits, they showed shadows. And they allowed the viewer to be frightened by their own imagination. This is superbly made horror film. It's such a remarkable film that I cannot recommend it strongly enough. As I said, it's black and white, 1963, and it is considered an absolute classic. No blood.
Thanks. I got that.
I'll post it up on the board. But you're right. It is difficult to storytell when you're doing something called a pastiche. A pastiche if I'm explaining something you already know, please forgive me. It is taking bits and pieces of different storylines and threading them together like a quilt, like a patchwork quilt, and making an entirely new a piece out of it. I did that once with for a contest. One of the few music-related contests that I entered, and it was for the Moody Blues. And I made a story out of 120 of their titles.
Wow.
Yes. I think I got a gold on it, too, come to think of it. But it is a real challenge to take those disassociated bits and put them together into something cogent. So, yeah, very good observation. Thank you for sharing that with us. So, oh, my God, we've got 6 minutes left. What do we got left?
Well, Naomi just put up a poem, so I'm going to post that instead of the one from S. Sharp.
Okay, great.
So if you wouldn't mind giving that a read for Naomi, please.
Would you like me to read it?
Clickety-clack.
Clickety-clack by Naomi Sarah. Thank you, Naomi. Clickety-clack, and the blood train rumbles on around and round the tracks, never stopping, never slowing down, a cyclical inferno of scarlet blur against white stuccoed walls. Clackety-clack, clackety-clack, roaring through his head, hollow scraping of bone on bone and grinding teeth from the profound darkness where a devil feasts, squashing his brain between skeletal fingers. His whistle thunders, huffs and puffs, blowing toxic putrid smoke of dragon's breath, circling him like a hawk possessed, burning the cusp of his grasp on the axe, still dripping crimson streaks. The rails are covered in rotting moss and thorny vines that cut his flesh in deep, fiery fissures of the horror of what he's done as he tastes the blood splattered upon his lips. He digs his fingernails into his scalp as the steel engine pounds louder, pumping into his veins, shrilling shrieks of midnight roosters as beady-eyed crows swoop low over torn bodies, slinking into quicksand glue under a tar-pitched moon, their slashing arms outstretched in screams of bleeding petals to a dying sun. Soaked in cold sweat, he curls into a tight, shivering fist as winter daggers cut him from hanging icicles on frozen pines are driven into his brittle glassy eyes, blood puddles with each jagged tip, leaking amidst hammer blows on coffin wood. Gone are the leaves and the buds, only scattered feathers of dead birds lay at his feet as the blackness of eyes of owls swallow leftovers of his shadowy frame. A firefly trapped inside a mason jar, his light withering away, drowning into scorching candle wax. He will never see her smile again, where they often sat on that crooked weathered bench beside the pond where the dragonflies danced along the surface, kissing the water lilies, bathing in scents of soft summer rain. He chokes in sobbing spasms, searching a world wherein clocks tick backwards, daisies bloom from a dying mouth, a secret sanctuary where we die for somewhere to belong. As he gazes upon the beat-up plank that holds their names engraved on the wall of his bedroom where they first kissed and where, with her whispered lies, she had plunged a sword through his chest, with eyeballs bulging and nostrils cringing under the acidy fumes of death, he gropes for the cushioned comfort of a suffocating pillow, crumbling to the floor where he spilt her skull, where he split her skull in half and forgot to leave her soul or her torso open cold. End poem.
Wow. Beautiful read. Bobby, and that was dark, image-filled, and, you know, almost turned your stomach, really. But we have about 60 seconds left, so if you want to get a quick quote in, comment, Robbie.
Please, Robbie.
It flows interestingly from one half to the next, where the first half is like the click-clack and the kind of the sharp staccato sort of words and the rhythm, but then as it goes through halfway, then it gets more kind of longer lines and softer sound, which I found interesting. Also, there is actually a SoundCloud with this. It was on the very bottom. So that's
hope I did her justice. I hope I did the reading justice. Very
and
powerful.
Nice to have she actually used the background to her to accentuate the poem because she's got all those bloody hands there. So that was cool to see.
Ooh. Well, we'll all have to listen to it. That's our homework. So, hey, Robbie, thank you so much for joining us. Come earlier next time. We'll have scones and tea, and we'll save you a seat. It was lovely having you. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, it was great having you, Robbie. Thank you for calling
in. You have a great Halloween. You have your homework. You have The Haunting to watch. And if you do go ahead and watch it, shoot me a quick note. I'd love to hear what you thought of it.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, Gray, thanks as always. I couldn't do it without you. Love and peace to everyone. Have a wonderful weekend, what's left of it, and see you in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely. Much love, everybody.
Ciao.
Good night.
Good night.
Ciao. Good night, Robbie.
Good night.